Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Runners Only with Dom Harvey.
Runners Only with Dom Harvey and my friend, Joseph Parker. Are we friends?
All friends.
Are we see, this is the funny thing. I've interviewed you maybe 20 times. I've got your phone number. I will text you the day of a fight and say good luck, and you'll always text back. But I wonder if we're actually friends or if this is just you as a person and you're like that with everyone. Everyone feels like they're your mate.
I think everyone feels like I'm their mate, but in my phone, I don't have everyone's number, like the whole world in my phone. So everyone that does text me back, I consider them as friends.
Right.
Yeah. And the people that I keep in touch with.
Right. Do you remember once you called me, I was in a supermarket, and you were inviting me to a party, but it turns out you were meaning to call Dominic Bowden.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do remember. Yes, I do. I was like, oh, sorry, mate. Oh, sorry, bro. I hope you're doing well. All the best.
I was so excited. I was in like the muesli bar aisle, and Joseph Parker's name came up on my screen.
Listen, but I only have like 5 DOMs in my phone, and when I called you, I invited the wrong DOM, yeah. And this and that. Oh man.
So how are you? Well, we're sitting in your gym / garage at home in South Auckland. It's a beautiful property. You've been overseas in whereabouts in the UK?
Morecambe. 1 hour north of Manchester. So.
Yeah, must be so nice to be back home.
Very nice. There's no place. I mean, that saying is very true. There is no place like home.
Yeah.
And I've traveled all around the world. I fought all around the world, met a lot of people, had a lot of fun. But when I come home, it's like there's a different feeling about coming home.
Yeah. Oh, that's special. And you didn't have to do MIQ this time, which must have been...
Oh, no, MIQ.
You've done that before with your entire family.
I did it with the wife and kids, and it's great to spend quality time.
Yeah.
But you're only allowed out of the room once a day or twice a day, and it's only for an hour. So it was quite hard, but it's nice to come back, arrive at the airport, have them waiting at the airport, running to me, Daddy, welcome back, and then coming to your home and being able to relax and chill and see family.
Yeah. That's so good. Now, the podcast is called Runners Only with Dom Harvey. So,
do you know what? To be totally honest, I used to not like running. Honestly, because I think I wasn't good at it.
Right. What do you mean in terms of speed?
I wasn't good at it because I was chubby back in the day, and every time I ran, I had a sore back, maybe because my stomach wasn't strong enough and my legs would get tired, and I thought, man, what? This is not for me.
When you say back in the day, when do you mean? What sort of age?
Like
school age or
like school age onwards, yeah. Right, and I just thought, running is very hard and I'm getting tired fast, and I'm, I couldn't even run 2 kilometers and I would be tired. Mm. And I thought, as a young boy, you should be able to run. I see everyone else running long distances and, being able to run and enjoying it and having fun, but I wasn't enjoying it back in the day.
Do you enjoy it now, or is it something you do as a necessary evil for aerobic fitness, for boxing?
For boxing, it's not so much for boxing, but I just love being out there now. I love. Just going out there, you're on your own. Sometimes you're on your own, sometimes you're with a group. Mm. But it's just time to think, and it's very challenging because sometimes you want to stop, sometimes, I can just go for a walk here and there, but there's that sort of like push. No, keep going right to the end, don't stop.
Mm.
I like the challenge.
So how far do you normally run, like 10Ks?
Nah, for boxing, 3 miles, four miles.
5Ks.
Sometimes 6 miles.
Right, right.
But most of the time it's 4 miles.
Right.
So it's about, what, 6Ks, 7Ks?
Yeah.
So not the longest runs, but it's just a constant pace. It's not like we're not the fastest runners in the world. We just go at a good pace.
Do you have any idea of what sort of pace you're doing? Is it like 5 minute kilometers or like 6 minute?
I think 7 minute miles. Nah, listen, sometimes...
Well, when did you start talking in miles? Is this from your time in the States?
Time in the States and time in the UK, because everything, everything that we talk about there is miles.
Right, right.
So
you're back in New Zealand.
Back
now,
in
mate.
New Zealand. So listen, five minute kilometre.
Okay, yep. That's a good little pace.
Yeah.
Because the stuff that you've shared on Instagram, in particular the stuff with you and Tyson Fury's camp, it looks like you guys have a lot of fun when you run.
Oh, listen, we have the best time.
Yeah.
Because we're running in a group, we're chatting away, we're telling jokes, we're having a laugh, And then we sometimes the pace picks up and we're challenging each other. Then sometimes we add a few sprints here and there. And it's just I think it's a great thing to do it with the team and as a team.
Mm. And then there's things you do like the Jolene challenge, which is you play the Jolene, Dolly Parton.
Jolene.
So you play the Jolene song from Dolly Parton, and then every time she says the word Jolene, you do a press up.
Yeah.
Do you stop during the run and do that, or is that at the end of the run?
That's at the end of the run.
Right.
And I'll tell you this, the first time I did it, I completed it, but it was very, very hard. Then the following camp that I went and did it, I was able to do it a lot better.
Mm.
But the fun things we do, right? We do a run, and then we do a Jolene challenge, and we do other challenges that, you know, challenge each other, you know, while we're there.
Just to bring the best out of one another.
Just to bring the best out of one another.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, listen, there's so much that we need to talk about. I want to talk a lot about Tyson Fury, because he's like one of the greatest athletes in the world, and he's your mate.
Yeah, and we're bringing him down to New Zealand. We're looking at bringing him to New Zealand.
Are you?
Yeah, in September sometime.
Wow. For
I think he's going to come down. He's going to do a tour.
Right.
We're looking at doing a tour. So he's going to come down and just share his knowledge and talk to people and share his experiences and mental health. And I think it'll be great to his way of giving back to the community.
Right. You got to get him on my podcast.
Well, we'll try it. Hey, Tyson.
What's up? We'll talk about that later. First of all, I want to go right back to the beginning. So your dad's name is Dempsey.
Yeah.
After the boxer.
Jack Dempsey.
Jack Dempsey, yeah. So this is like your destiny in a way, isn't it? Like your dad was into boxing. When you were like three, you'd punch your dad's palms of his hands.
I feel like this was my destiny. And my dad was named after a fighter. Couldn't box himself because of a disability.
Right.
And he always loved boxing, and he had a few street fights when he lived in Samoa. And listen, a lot of people said he's quite the tough man. He's quite the tough man, he was, old Dempsey.
Yeah. So he was it kind of like Tiger Woods in a way? So Tiger Woods' dad wasn't a great golfer, but had a passion for golf.
Passion. Passion was. And at a young age, buying videotapes of Mike Tyson, buying videotapes of other fighters, Larry Holmes, and we would watch it. He'd play it and watch it and teach us and take us to different gyms and just give us the best that he could in terms of what he knew about boxing.
Yeah. So when did you start? Like 10?
10 years old.
Yeah. Who are you fighting at 10?
I had my first fight at 12.
Right.
Amateur fight.
Right.
And I wasn't in the best shape. I was short and chubby. But the guy that I was fighting was chubbier. So he made me look he made me look like I was in good shape. So I won that fight. It was a good start to my boxing career.
So did you play any other sports like prior to that?
Volleyball, rugby. I got a cauliflower ear from, you know, playing lock.
Is that from rugby? I've noticed your cauliflower ear before, but I thought you must have been punched in the ear.
Rugby. Yeah. Right. Playing lock. Played volleyball. What else did I play?
Cricket. You ever play cricket? No.
I trialed for the team in school and they didn't pick me. So I said no.
Wow.
Not cricket.
Was it 12 the age that you like settled on boxing?
12 was when I had my first fight, and it was about 15 or 16 when I started traveling the world representing New Zealand.
Yeah.
I settled on boxing.
Did you win that first fight at 12?
I won the first fight, yeah.
Against the fat Erica.
Against the fatter guy.
Can you remember his name or anything?
Oh, listen, if I could meet the guy, I'd like to say thanks for the first experience in boxing, but I forgot his name.
I wonder if he remembers your name and that, you know, you're now...
That we fought each other and...
Yeah. That'd
listen,
be amazing.
If he's ever listening to this, reach out because I'd love to have a chat.
So you won that fight. How can you remember much of how you were feeling like prior to it? So you're 12 years old. I'm guessing you're in Form 1, Form 2 sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, were you shitting bricks or were you just so young and dumb that you didn't sort of have the fear?
Just I can remember being very nervous. You know, your first fight, and then your parents are there, and you know, your dad's name is Dempsey. He loves boxing, telling everyone else around him that my son's going to be champion of the world one day, and you really want to do well and impress, and you know, give it your best. But I remember feeling very nervous and just like all these people eyes on me. This is at the ABA, like the Auckland Boxing Association. Like, it's not like there wasn't a lot of people there, but for a young boy at 12 years old, it felt like 10,000 crowd was there watching me.
Well, there's not many people there, but all eyes are on you. Like, what you do is probably one of my worst fears, I think, like being in a boxing
fight. I think you should do a boxing fight.
Absolutely not. Never. It must be, I mean, the thought of like being in the ring and you have all your corner men and whatever, and then everyone leaves, and it must be just the most lonely and terrifying thing.
It is. And before a fight, you're with your whole team. Mm. When you're in the ring, you're with your whole, your team's there with you, but you're fighting by yourself. The whole crowd is there.
Yeah, so that moment for me sounds absolutely terrifying, but that's because I know I wouldn't be very good. But for you, on the other hand, is it a terrifying moment now, or is it exciting because it's like I'm gonna beat this fucker
now
up.
Going into the fight?
Yeah,
exciting. Everything is done like you with running. The preparation is key. Whenever you train hard, you do everything right, and you know. Mental side of things, physical side of things. When you go into the ring, that is time to enjoy and have fun. There's a different enjoyment. Like it's a reward for all your hard work. And even though the reward is getting punched in the face and punching someone else in the face, but it's what we train to do.
Yeah, yeah. You've said that to me over the years, and I find it hard to believe. Like, I don't know. I do believe you, but part of me feels like it's you know.
Like imagine training your whole life, and like even like camp doesn't go smoothly, and in camp you get injuries. You're sore. You're tired. You're frustrated. You're mentally drained because you're learning all these different things, and in the fight week everything tapers off, and you're sort of fresh and you're edging to go. Mm. Like that's enjoyment. For me that's enjoyment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I suppose there's a lot of like parallels between boxing and running in that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you get in the ring, you can just say to yourself, trust the training. You know you've done the work and...
Trust the process, trust the structure, trust the training, and have fun.
Right.
When you're going into the ring, like my brother fought in the weekend, and he won his fight, and got on him. And before the fight, I called Tyson. I said, hey, Tyson, John's fighting. And they were talking on fight night. And Tyson just said to him, John, just relax and enjoy yourself. Go out there and have fun. That's all it is, going out there and having fun.
Yeah. Do you think, like, if you get too nervous, nerves can get the better of you? Nerves can be, like, a good thing or a bad thing?
nerves will drain your energy in boxing. And so the good thing about, if I talk about me and Tyson, we warm up the same. Music is playing, we're dancing, we're singing, we're having fun, telling jokes. When I saw his warm-up before a fight, I was like, it's exactly how I warm up. Mm. Just chilled out until you have to get into the ring and fight.
Yeah. So back to the amateur stuff. So you had how many amateur fights? Was it like 100 or something?
I had about 80 fights, right. Amateur fights, most of them international,
right.
Traveling around the world, representing New Zealand.
Yeah, because you went to a Commonwealth. What Commonwealth Games did you go to? That was,
I went to Commonwealth Champs in 2010 in India.
Right.
Then I went to the World Youth Champs in Azerbaijan, you know, somewhere close to Russia. Then I went to the Commonwealth Games and then Singapore Olympics.
Right. Where did you finish in the Commonwealth Games? Did you get a medal or no?
No, I didn't get a medal. Didn't get a medal.
Does that gut you?
Yeah, because I was so close. I was beating, you know, I beat the favorite guy in the tournament to win, and then I lost the next fight to some guy from Trinidad and Tobago.
Right,
but it was a close fight. I was beating him as well, and then he got the better of me. My fitness.
Right, is that what it is?
Yeah, my fitness, and I think being overtrained.
Right,
overtrained.
So can you remember who beat you at the Commonwealth Games? Are they still boxing? Are they doing anything now?
I don't think he's still boxing, but it was a guy from Trinidad and Tobago. I remember that.
What a badge of honour for him.
Yeah, beating.
Joseph Parker.
Yeah, smashed me. Nah.
A badge of honour for him, but also it must be, like, it must grind him in some ways that, you know, you're fighting at the O2 or whatever against AJ, earning millions of dollars, and he beat you, and he's not doing that.
Yeah. Fighting and, AJ in Cardiff.
Mm.
Cardiff, Wales, in front of nearly 80,000 people.
Mm.
It could have been him. It could have been other people that beat me. Yeah.
Yeah. How come you never made it to the Olympics?
I didn't make it to the Olympics because I lost the tournament, the qualifying tournament that I needed to win at.
Mm.
But before then, I beat three or four guys that already went to the Olympics.
Mm. Seems like you were having a lot of losses as an amateur. Were you not very good, or was this like your apprenticeship?
I'll tell you the truth. I wasn't taking it seriously.
Okay.
There was a certain time where I did take it seriously and I put in work, but in other times I just enjoyed myself, didn't train hard enough, ate whatever I wanted to do, hung out with my friends, and thought that I could show up and win because of talent, which wasn't the case.
So out of all those amateur fights, what was your win-loss record? Can you remember? Not really.
I can't remember. There's a yellow book that we're supposed to keep. It has all our... someone ate it. I would have had 80 fights and I lost 10.
Right.
Well, most of them international.
Right.
Like all over the world.
Okay. Was that just pretty much sort of natural talent, really? you know, it seems like you trained reasonably hard, but as you said before, you know, you were partying, hanging with your friends or whatever.
Yeah, doing all that.
So was a lot of it just natural talent?
I feel I was blessed with the talent of boxing.
Yeah, yeah.
And helped, obviously encouraged from my dad at a young age, and then blessed with this talent, but didn't give it everything until I turned professional.
Right. When was the decision made to turn professional, and why at that particular moment? It seems like you were an amateur for a lot of fights in a lot of years.
Yeah, I was an amateur for a while, and the you know, when I did miss out on the Olympics, it was one of those, it was a dream to attend the Olympics and do well at it.
Of course.
When I missed out, my parents went looking for, my parents and my management team with my uncle went looking for a team who could help me in my professional career, and that was Duco Events. So because I beat three or four guys that already went to the Olympics, I knew I was on that level. And I just had to find the right team, train hard and actually focus properly and put in the work.
From my perspective of being in commercial radio at that time at a top 40 station called The Edge, Duco did a fantastic job. That was Dean Lonergan and David Higgins.
Yeah.
We would never have had boxers on because our audience wasn't really into boxers, but you came along and you were young and you were articulate and you were handsome and you didn't sound like a boxer. And we interviewed you maybe 20 times.
Listen,
we had
some great fun.
Yeah.
I remember you and Kevin had some great fun in particular.
Oh, yeah, okay, we'll talk about that. Sure, okay. So this is Kevin Barry. So did Duco team you up with Kevin Barry?
Duco linked me with Kevin Barry.
Right. So that was after you turned pro. Was he sort of instrumental, do you think, in getting you to take it more seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a big influence in my boxing career in the very beginning. I had like about three fights here in New Zealand professionally when I signed up with Duco. Then it took me a while to sign the contract with Duco because I was very nervous. My team were nervous, and this was an all new sort of experience for us, a new chapter. But I'm very happy because Duco invested a lot in me right in the beginning.
Imagine in terms of?
Money.
Really? How do you mean?
Flights, accommodation, food, training camp, training costs, sparring partners, everything, and still paying me a purse.
Right.
They invested heavily.
Wow.
Without knowing if I was actually going to be good or not.
So like having a punt on a horse.
Having a punt on, yeah.
So what was the money like in the beginning with Duco? What sort of, you go from amateur to pro, like I'm guessing anything's good. Was it?
As an amateur, some tournaments you made a bit of money.
Like how much? What are you talking about? A couple of grand?
2,000.
Yeah.
A couple of grand. And then I signed a contract to fight in China. I was in China fighting for a while, World Series Boxing. And I actually lived in China for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months, fighting all around China, Beijing, Macau. And then as a professional, when I signed professional, I made, like, the first fight I made, what, I made $5,000. It was good. I spent it all on my first car, Toyota Corolla 1994. Put mags on it, sound system, everything.
Well, shit, I'm looking out in your driveway now. There's a couple of Jeeps out there. Yeah. There's like a Kia family wagon. You're doing it's a bit of an upgrade from the Corolla.
A big upgrade. I'm fortunate, like, as a fighter or as an athlete, I get looked after by a lot of people, and Andrew Sims really look after me.
Who's Andrew Sims?
The car company.
Oh, okay, right.
So every time I come back, they always give me a car. I'm like, thank you, guys.
Isn't it funny how it works? Like, it gets to the point where you can afford your own vehicles and then that's when people start giving you, and clothes, shoes, whatever. Strange how that works.
You're right. Right in the beginning, when you need the help, no one wants to help you.
Yeah.
But like when you've made it and you're sort of, you're doing well for yourself and you can afford it, people want to help you.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Shit, you've made some sacrifices. Oh, so you team up with Kevin Barry, and then you spent a lot of time in Vegas.
I spent 8 years in Vegas with Kevin. 8 years on and off. I think I've been to Vegas over 30 times in those 8 years.
When people think of Vegas, they think of the fun place that you go. They think of the strip. They think of the place where you go and you spend 3 days, 2 nights there, and then you're done. Out of Vegas, it's a very different vibe.
Out of Vegas, it's like normal family life. There's schools, there's shops, there's like little community groups.
Cul-de-sacs.
Yeah. So it's a very normal place where we're staying. Where Kevin lives. I was living at his house with him, his wife Tanya, and their family and the kids.
And you're just living, eating, breathing, sleeping, boxing.
All I did was train, eat, sleep, repeat the whole time I was there.
Right.
Obviously, as the time went on and I got comfortable, I made a lot of friends and I started, you know, experiencing what Vegas was. but I was able, but always staying where Kevin was and staying at his house, I was always able to focus because he was away from the strip, and the gym was just not far from the house, and we had a good schedule and a good structure in place.
Yeah, yeah. He's very good, isn't he?
Kevin's very good.
Very good. Yeah, you touched upon Kevin before. So you and Kevin came in for an interview one day, and this is I regret this now. I was an asshole. But the thing is, like what I'm doing now with the podcast is I can have like proper conversations with people like you, and we don't have to get you to change a nappy or do dumb stuff that's required when you're doing a radio show like that. So you and Kevin came in. Can you tell the story? Can you tell the story from your perspective?
This is my perspective, okay. Right? This is what I remember. We came in and did an interview, and everything was going well, and asking questions, and we were answering it. And I answered a lot of questions, and Kevin answered a few questions. And then you jumped in with this great idea of asking a question online and on air live about Kevin's hair. And as soon as you asked the question, whether it was real or not, you walked over and touched it. And I could see, you know, fuming and he never answered any questions after that. I was answering all the questions.
Yeah.
So that's what I remember.
It was I'm embarrassed about it now. Like it's a terrible thing to do, like going over and like tagging another man's hair. It was dumb, but I was like doing it, you know, to try and
Is it because of the radio and you're trying to do things to...
I mean, I've got to own it because I did it and no one asked me to do it. But you just want to get a little bit of video content that's going to stand out. I mean, had Kevin punched me, it would have been amazing. You know, it would have knocked my teeth out, or it would have just about killed me. But it was dumb, and it was really horrible of me. It was a nasty thing to do. And then as soon as the mics went off, he came up to me and sort of like danced around me like a boxer and said something like, "Oh, you think you're funny, do you, boy? You think you're funny?" Oh, I thought he was about to hit me. Then. Do you remember that? I was shitting myself.
Yeah, you did. Like Kevin doesn't take any bull crap.
So he's been good to you, and then so you were with him for many, many years and many fights. Why the decision to break up? It seems like your breakup with him was good.
Yeah, it was a good breakup. We're still very close because of the 8 years we spent together.
Yeah,
I was living at his house, and he was treating me like his son, and just giving me every bit of knowledge that he had in the boxing world. Mm-hmm. And we still commute. Listen, I went to Tyson's fight with Deontay Wilder, and I went and stayed at their house.
Right.
When I stayed at the house in Vegas. The reason why I left Kevin and the team in Vegas, I felt like boxing for me at that time was getting stale. You know, I did have the fight with Junior Fahey in New Zealand. I felt like when I went to the ring, you know, even though I trained so hard with strength and conditioning, running, boxing, I did everything right, slept well, ate clean, I still felt tired after the first or second round. And I put that down to just overtraining and not having... I think just doing too much. Over the years, I did more and more training, and I wasn't resting enough.
Mm.
And that's no one else's fault but mine, because I thought the more is better.
Of course, yeah, it makes sense. But then I suppose it gets to the point where there's diminishing returns, eh?
Yeah.
And there's a quote, I think Einstein said this. He said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
That's exactly it. And so I was doing the same thing. Imagine doing the same thing for 8 years. Of course, in the beginning, it was great. But it became just the same. It became stale, and I wasn't excited anymore. I sort of felt like I was losing a passion for boxing. Mm. Just because, damn, I have to go to Vegas again. Oh, I have to, you know, I have to be in camp again. I have to do this, I have to do that. But I think the change just revived me as a fighter.
Mm.
Gave me excitement and gave me this new environment, new team, new structure, new program, new trainer. And I'm learning new things.
Mm. So, yeah, now you're with this guy called Andy Lee, who has the same name as Andy from Hamish and Andy, but is not the same person. So Andy Lee was
a world champion.
Oh, was he?
Middleweight world champion.
Right, right.
Irish Andy Lee.
Right. So what makes him so damn good? And why did you team up with him?
So before I broke up with Kevin, I was sort of sitting in my house. I was thinking, who should I talk to about a trainer? Okay, I'll call Tyson. Hey, Tyson, can I call you? And then he goes, yeah, call me. So I called him, video called. Hey, Tyson, looking at leaving Kevin. And I was looking at training with this trainer. What do you think about him? Don't train with him, Joseph. There's three trainers that I recommend who have been the best for me in this world. The first one is Emmanuel Stewart that I've trained with. The second one is Sugar Hill. And the third one is Andy Lee. I reckon I can get you and Andy Lee connected together and you guys can work together. I reckon you guys will gel and you know, he can make a big difference in your career. I said, what's so good about Andy? He said, Andy is not just a pad holder. Andy is a teacher. And he will teach you boxing, not just hold the pads for you and tell you to do this and that and combinations, but he will teach you boxing.
Right. What does that mean exactly? Can you elaborate on that a bit more?
There's some trainers who will just hold the pads and tell you anyone can hold pads and anyone can be a fitness trainer.
Mm-hmm.
But when you break it all down, there's only certain trainers or people that can be teachers in boxing who can actually tell you to do this and tell you to do that, slow things down, watch you when you're doing something and correct it. But not everyone can correct it because not everyone knows what the right way of punching is or what the right way of doing this is or that.
So how did you and Tyson Fury become friends? I remember seeing like some clip on you online, maybe on Instagram, after one of your fights, and Tyson was there and he had his shirt off, and this is when he was into his cocaine and partying, and he was like ballooned, had retired at that point. When was that? Can you remember the clip
that
I'm talking about?
That was 2017. It was as soon as I that was the first time I met Tyson.
After what fight?
Was when I fought his cousin Huey Fury.
Right.
So I fought his cousin, we had the press conference, and that was the first time I ever met him, but we used to keep in touch on social media. So I met him and we spoke at the press conference, and then we got up and gave each other a big hug because he was always supporting me and watching what I was doing on this side of the world, fighting top fighters, winning and doing well, and I was always supporting him. And we were keeping in touch on social media, and that was the first time I met him. Then after I beat his cousin, he came to my room and we had a great time. We had a great, great, great time.
Do you want to elaborate on that or not really?
Listen, we partied. We had a great time in terms of partying. We went to my room, and then after that, we went to some ice bar. We're all shirtless. And, you know, obviously I woke up the next day with a cold, but the night before, we had a great time. We just enjoyed and partied the night away.
Mm. See, the amazing thing, and this is just part of the glorious, colourful mosaic that is Tyson Fury's life. Like, it would have been easy for him to get further and further into addiction and spiral down, but somehow he managed to pull himself out of that and become, like, one of the greatest athletes the world's ever seen.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But
the amazing story is what he's done before his breakdown, you know, becoming world champion, because that was his goal.
Because he beat Vladimir Klitschko, right?
He beat Vladimir Klitschko, which opened up the whole heavyweight division.
Yeah.
Then he went on his downfall and his drugs and alcohol and mental health and had all these issues. And the comeback is the biggest and the baddest story of them all. Because you have all these heavyweights training every day, putting the work in, and they're boxing and fighting consistently and still winning. And you have Deontay Wilder, who never had a break, I don't even know if he does drugs or drinks or whatever. Mm. But and then you got Tyson Fury here, who did all of this and came back and beat everyone. Like, that is one of the stories that I don't think there's another story like it.
It's incredible, and he's so exciting to watch as well. I don't know anything about boxing, but I know that he's an exciting guy to watch, like, outside the ring and in the ring. Like,
Do you know what's exciting about him to watch?
What's that?
The lead into the fights, the way he talks, personality.
Mm.
And then it's like he takes that into the ring with him.
Mm.
You know, like, imagine fighting someone in the ring and his hands are behind his back and his tongue's out and he's moving his head side to side and he's teasing you, talking to you. Like, that'll be the most, like, I don't know, annoying fighter to fight. And I think in terms of people talking before the fight, like the press conference away, and I don't think people want to banter with him because he is next level.
Yeah. And then there's afterwards when he breaks into song, he's just so how would you go against him? Like, you've sparred with him quite a bit, so you know him.
Never sparred him. I've done body sparring, but we've never sparred each other, like hitting each other in the face, or we've never done full contact, only body sparring.
Right. He'd kick your ass, right? Wouldn't he?
Nah. I back myself.
Really?
Right? Yeah.
Really?
But the fight that he just had of Dillian White, I was a standby fighter, which meant if White didn't show up to fight, I was on standby to fight him.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that because I thought he said at some point, maybe a few years ago, that he would never fight.
We said that we'll never fight each other.
Yeah, yeah. But so that when you were like the standby, the understudy, whatever you want to call it, was that like, hey Joseph, like if this happens, you get in the ring, it'll be a massive payday. Was it that?
Yeah.
Sort of thing?
He goes, if White doesn't show up and you're the standby fighter, and you fight me, you get a chance to beat me for the world title and you get paid. If you don't fight me, you still get paid a little bit of money to stay ready.
Mm.
So I got paid either way.
Yeah.
And it was just a way of him looking after me.
Mm.
I was with him in camp for 15 weeks for this last fight.
Mm.
And we ate in the morning, we trained, and we ate again, and we rested, and we ate again, and we trained. Like, it was a 15-week of hard training, clean eating, and it was great. It was just a great lead into the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose with like that intimate information about how he works, it would definitely increase your chances of having a good crack against
listen,
him.
Listen, I back myself right. If I had to fight him. If I was, if White didn't show up and I had to fight him, you know, I was in a gym training with him, but I was also watching what he was doing, just examining and seeing what, you know, I knew exactly what they were working on. I knew exactly what was happening in camp, so I would have had a good chance.
Does he hit a real? Does he? It seems like he can take a massive punch.
Yeah, he can take big. Well, listen, he got off the ground. He just like he rose from the dead.
Yeah, it was Deontay crazy. Wilder. It was crazy.
He can take a punch. He can give a big punch too, and we could see that because he knocked out. Mm. You know, Dillian White with one punch knockout power.
Yeah. What does he drive?
He drives a Passat, like Passat. What is it, a Volkswagen or?
No, get out.
Like a state, yeah, like a hatchback.
Yeah, that's a VW. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he drives. Yeah. And
what
I drive,
else?
Listen, my car, the tire was flat the other day, and then I was like, "Hey, Tyson, can I borrow a car?" And he goes, "Yeah, take the Ferrari." I go, "No, no, no, give me the Passat. I like the Passat."
Okay, so drives the V-Dub. So he's got a Ferrari. What else has he got?
He's got a Rolls Royce. He's got a G-Wagon. He's got a few cars.
Yeah, and has he actually retired? Do you think that's it?
I think he's retired.
Yeah.
Listen, I think he's retired. I'll just take his word for it. But you know, if someone offers him $80 million to come back, or I don't know, it won't make a difference because he's already a wealthy man. But I don't know what'll make him come back.
But he's never fought Anthony Joshua, has he?
He's never fought him, no.
No.
But he'll own him.
Yeah, will he?
Yeah, big time.
What makes you say that? Because if I was sitting, you just said to me before that you'd beat Tyson Fury in a fight. So if I was sitting here,
Joshua beat me, but I was.
If I was sitting here with Anthony Joshua, he'd say the same thing, wouldn't he? He'd say I'd own Tyson Fury.
Yeah, he would say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously, people think. Listen, I might be biased because I'm very close to him and we're like brothers. But
I fully agree. I think he would absolutely own it.
I fought Joshua, and you know he's a very good fighter, and he was a great champion. And hopefully he can come back and beat Usyk. We'll see what he does. But I've trained along Tyson, and I've seen the difference. I haven't trained, with Anthony Joshua, but I've trained with Tyson. I've seen the difference mentally and physically, and how he trains. And I'm just like, you know, it's lifted my game being there. If it wasn't for moving to England and training with Andy Lee and Tyson, my career would be done by now. I think.
Is that so?
Because after the junior far fight, if I continued doing what I was doing, it was going downhill.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a close fight, wasn't it? Was it closer than what you'd like?
It shouldn't have been close.
Yeah.
I should have been in great shape, and I should have been in better shape. And I should have been able to go from round one to round 12 and pick up the pace.
Mm.
But I went from round one to round 12, and the pace went down, 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 down.
Yeah. So if you had to put a percentage on it, how much do you think you've improved since the junior far fight, since you've been working with Andy Lee?
I think if you compare the first Chisora fight to the second Chisora fight, it's a massive difference and a massive improvement.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let's talk about some of the other characters in this camp you're with. So there's Tyson Fury, also Tommy Fury. I'm a Love Island fan from way back. So
yeah, are you?
Yeah, I love that series. That was my favourite series. Yeah, Tommy and Molly May.
Yeah.
Do you know Molly May?
Yeah, I know Molly May.
Yeah, you see her.
She was in camp on fight week, and she came to the fight. Obviously, come to support Tommy. But Tommy is a good talent. I think now that he's obviously training with Tyson and putting in the work and giving it everything he has, effort every day, I think he can be a force.
So he's like a half brother to Tyson. Jesus, it's a lot of pressure having that name, isn't it?
Well, listen, having the Fury name, of course, if you want to be like your brother.
Yeah.
But he's a celebrity in his own right with that Love Island.
Massive
star. Massive star. And he's
good looking too.
And yeah, he is, eh?
Yeah, very handsome.
And he's he's always the one with the shirt off because he's obviously got big muscles. And he's like, "How do I look, Joe?" I was like, "Yeah, you look good. You look all right. You look all right, mate."
Yeah, that's you've always So he's ripped to shreds. So is Anthony Joshua. And then there's you've always sort of had like little love handles or carried a bit of puppy fat, same as Tyson Fury. Like he's how so? How can you train that hard and still be carrying a bit of blubber?
I'm not sure. Is it because it just a body composition thing? Is it body different type body types?
Yeah. That's the thing about Fury. Yeah, it's like this is.
I'll tell you this about Tyson. Right, yeah. His body doesn't look the best, but he is strong and he is the fittest person I ever trained with. If you talk to Sonny Bill, because he was in camp with us, if you talk to David Naika, they will tell you that he is one of the fittest people that we've ever trained with, ever.
That's right. Yeah, Sonny Bill was over there for a while, and then he went back to Australia and demolished his opponent. How do you think? Do you know much about Jake Paul?
No, only from what I've seen.
Right.
Only from what I've seen on social media with the pads and with the fight that he had. With how many fights has he had? 3 or 4 fights, something like that.
So how do you think? Like from what you've seen, and obviously you don't know much about it. Your guess is as good as anyone's. Would Sonny Bill waste him?
I'd back Sonny Bill to beat him.
Yeah.
Sonny has. The sacrifice that he made to fly over to England, at the time Tyson and I weren't doing boxing, we were only doing weights. So Sonny was there for 4 days and he was getting ready to fly home again because we weren't doing boxing. And then when Tyson heard of it, Tyson said, "All right, you come to the gym the next day and I'll show you how to box."
Yeah.
And then he showed him how to box.
Wow, then, steep learning curve for Sonny Bill, is that what you mean?
It was the biggest learning and it was the biggest test and it was the biggest challenge. He flew from Australia to England, not knowing what to expect, and then Tyson put him through his paces. And then he flew to Ireland and spent 4 or 5 weeks with Andy Lee. Then he flew back and, had a great fight.
Is he a good boxer?
He's getting better and better.
Yeah.
Because he didn't give it time back in the day, he was giving it half his time. He was giving rugby and league most of his time. He was an okay fighter. But now he's giving his full time. I think he's going to do a lot better.
Yeah.
Way better.
Is he a good guy? What would be something that you could tell me about Sonny Bill that no one would know? That would surprise us.
Something about Sonny. I'm not sure. I don't even know if there's anything I could say that would be surprising. But he's very much a family man, and he's very dedicated to his religion. He shows that online anyway.
He's Muslim hardcore, isn't he?
Muslim hardcore, and he's a very dedicated athlete in everything he does. Like eating, resting, recovery, stretching. Like I walked down to his room the other day when we were in England. I say, "Hey, what are you up to, bro?" He's rolling out, and just any spare moment he has, he does something that benefits him in terms of being in physical shape.
Right, he's grown up to be. I remember in his early days, he was so polarizing. Remember, everyone hated him.
Yeah,
Bill Williams, and he was playing rugby, then he was playing league, and
moving from this, moving from that, trying this, trying that.
I feel like he's really sort of you've grown as a person over like the last 10 years, 5 years.
Yeah,
mm.
You're definitely right. He's grown as a person, but the one thing I really do admire about him is just how close he is with his family.
Yeah.
And the love he has for his wife and kids.
Yeah, now let's talk about that because I'm sitting in your garage with you, and you shut the door, and your family's on the other side of the door. You've made a lot of sacrifices. Like you've spent a lot of time away from your family over the years. Eh? So you got three kids,
three daughters,
three kids. How many of the births were you at?
None.
You missed all of them.
Missed all, and my wife's pregnant right now.
Oh, you got number four on the way.
Number four, she's due any day now. Maybe I think in a week's time, and I might not be here. I might be gone tomorrow.
She must be so understanding.
She is a beast. Like she's very understanding, and we're fortunate. Like I got a very supportive family. She's got a very supportive family. Mm. And when I'm not here, they all come and
everyone steps
up and helps out.
Yeah.
And listen, that's a blessing to have, a great family. But she's the best. My wife's the best.
So they're all three are girls?
All three are girls.
What
Elizabeth,
ages?
Shiloh, and Michaela. At the moment, they're 2, 3, and 5. Well, soon they're going to be 3, 4, 5.
Oh my God. And you're going to have a baby.
And a baby as well. Listen, the Parker household is a busy household.
Right. Do you feel, you've got to focus and do your job, but do you feel guilty when you're away?
Of course I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I tell my oldest daughter, Elizabeth, that I'm leaving next week, she's going to start crying every day from now until the day I leave. And it's the saddest thing. It's
so you just leave without saying goodbye?
No, we tell her closer to the time.
Yeah.
It's the saddest thing seeing your, I don't know, just seeing
it's
your child.
Heartbreaking.
So upset and just doesn't want to do anything because they're just thinking about, they're dreading the day you're going to leave.
There's no way, I mean, I'm sure you've got the financial means. There's no way you can just travel with the family and homeschool them.
We did. We traveled. You did? Listen, yeah. I went to the Chisora fight in October last year. I flew the family up in December. Then we couldn't get back into New Zealand because everyone was stuck.
Yeah.
So we spent 4 months together overseas. They flew back end of March, and I flew back not long ago. So we do travel, but she can't travel at the moment because
of course,
being pregnant.
Of course.
But if she wasn't pregnant, we'll be away again as a family.
Okay. So we used to joke with you on the radio all the time when you came in for interviews about how you'd never changed a nappy. Has that situation changed?
Oh, big time!
Oh, has
Listen,
it?
Listen, I've grown as a father and as a man. I do get down and dirty. Listen, I've changed. I think for my first daughter, I changed one. Second daughter, I changed two, and then the third one, I've changed multiple.
Three. So for the fourth one, you're going to change four.
Four.
Okay, so tell me about your partner. When did you guys meet? You were Lainey, like high school sweethearts?
Lainey, yeah. I've known Lainey since I was 13 years old. And then we started dating around 15, 16 years old, and we've been together ever since.
So 13, that's about the same time as you started boxing. So
yeah.
Did you crush on each other then, or were you just friends?
I think I was crushing on her. I was like, I was at school, I was like, oh, damn, look at that chick. Hey, how's it going?
is that your cool guy voice?
Nah, hey, how's it going?
How are you doing?
Yeah, you doing? So I started boxing around that age. I met her, and then I found out that her dad really loved boxing as well. So and then when we got together, he's always been very supportive and of my career, and you know, traveling around, and always helped me financially as well when I was traveling, to amateur tournaments around the world.
Yeah. So you met at 13. Started going out at 15, did
15,
you say?
Yeah, yeah, around 15, 16.
And you had a break at all, or you've been together ever since?
Been together ever since.
So when did you first say I love you, like at the age of 15?
At 13.
When 13?
Nah.
Oh, yeah. Are you
I said it, and she didn't say it back. I said, hey, nice to meet you, what's your name? I said, I love you.
This is amazing. So this is the only woman you've been with.
Yeah, this is.
So school ball together.
Ball together.
Everything like that.
Yeah.
So when did you get married?
We got married recently.
But you don't rush into these things, do you?
Yeah, no, we don't rush.
You just want to make sure she was the one.
Yeah, we got married not long ago, and we had it. Yeah, listen, it was the best day. We had it at Boomrock. Have you been to that place? Boomrock down in Cowrie Bay?
No.
Oh, very beautiful, nice place. It was nice and private, and everyone there had a great time. We told everyone it was an end-of-year function to dress up, and then when it all turned up, it was a wedding. Surprise!
Big wedding, small wedding?
70 people.
70. Oh, yeah, standard. Is she Samoan as well?
She's Samoan.
Yeah.
Listen, we have big families. My mom's one of 27 or something, something like that.
So you're Samoan, but you're born in New Zealand?
I'm born in New Zealand. Yeah. Both my parents are born in Samoa.
God, Samoa's a great place. I love that country so much.
You've been?
Yeah, a couple of times. I love it there.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So can you swim?
Of course I can swim.
Right.
I've got flippers as feet.
No, but most Samoans can't. You go to some...
Really?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, a friend of mine who works in radio, Nixon, he was at MyFM for a while and he's at the Edge now. He was saying, unless he talks a lot of shit, so maybe he was pulling my leg, but he said in Samoa... It's a prestige thing. The further inland you are or the further up you are, the more prestigious it is. So you know how in New Zealand you want to be as close to the water as you can.
Yeah, yeah,
in Samoa it's the opposite. So people just can't swim over there.
Oh, I don't,
is that true or no?
I don't know that.
Can your parents swim?
Yeah, my parents can swim.
Oh, he's full of shit.
We have a family waterfall and,
a family waterfall?
In Samoa,
In your village, right.
In our village, yeah.
Yeah.
And we go, I think... that's news to me. Thanks, Nixon. I've learned something new today.
Yeah. Jeez, has it been hard over the years being married, like as you've got more and more famous? I mean, like there must you're out of the country, like you're this big star. There must be massive temptations. Like I saw a photo in I think Daily Mail last year of Tyson after one of his fights. Now Tyson's married to Paris.
Paris, yeah,
yeah. There's this photo of Tyson at some hotel, and he's just like surrounded by beautiful women. Like,
well, at the beach pool, whatever.
Yeah, some resort, and some resort. Tommy's there as well. And it's Tommy's.
I saw that too.
Yeah, is it like that for you?
Nah,
like women just cracking onto you.
Not at all. I don't put myself in that environment. When I'm in, like, say I'm overseas training in England, I got the apartment that I'm staying in. And all I do is apartment, gym, go to the shop to do my shopping, and that's it. It's like it's the same routine every day.
Yeah.
And you don't put yourself out there to be tempted or to be in an environment where a woman will, you know. And when I'm in England, not many people know me anyways.
Is that right?
I live, yeah.
Yeah, right. Or maybe because that's the environment you live in and they see you all the time, they don't care as much.
Or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. What's an average day look like? So you're at home at the moment, so you're not training for any particular fight. First of all, that's got to be the weirdest thing, training and staying fit when you don't know who your next opponent's going to be. It would be like you training for an event, but you're not sure if it's going to be a 5K run, 10K run, half marathon, marathon, whatever.
Yeah.
It's got to be the weirdest thing.
Not anymore. Back then, after a fight, I would do no training. And I would have a great time and do nothing. And then when I start camp again, I've already gained 15 kgs and I have to lose it again. And I'm spending all my time in camp losing weight instead of working on the skills and techniques and game plan that you need for the next fight. So I've promised myself that this is a lifestyle. Even if I don't have a fight locked in, I train every day.
Yeah.
And my wife and kids give me time to train every day, sometimes twice a day. And it's just good for my mental health as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because Tyson Fury, he's been very, very open about his mental health and his struggles with depression over the years. He was even suicidal at one point. How's your mental health been? You've been good over the years?
My mental health has been good, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, so I've been through similar things that what Tyson's been through.
Have you? In what way?
I was doing boxing, but I was, down. I wasn't happy. I was partying, drinking with my friends and that, and not focusing. And even though I was training and fighting, my head wasn't right and I wasn't in the right place and yeah. I wasn't, on the outside it looked like everything was fine, but on the inside it wasn't.
When was this? What stage of your life?
When I won the world title.
Is that right?
It's the same as him. He won the world title, went downhill. I won the world title, went downhill as well. And I don't know how or why, but it just happened.
Do you think part of it is, I'm just guessing here, but part of it is like you've got this massive goal, and then you reach it, and then it's like, what now?
I think that's it.
Yeah.
So when I reached it, I was like, everyone thought it was the best feeling in the world. And listen, it did feel good to be world champion and make everyone happy, but...
What do you mean make everyone happy? Like people back home here in New Zealand?
Yeah, my parents, because it was my dad, right? It was a goal for my dad to be world champion.
Mm.
So it was a goal together. It was a goal for Kevin to have a world champion. And so I've made all these people happy. But I wasn't truly happy. Not sure why.
Do you feel like it was more other people's goal than your goal?
I think it was more other people's goals, because when I reached it, it wasn't like anything new. It didn't feel any different.
And then, just another fight.
And then I achieved it, and then what's next?
Yeah.
Then, went downhill.
How did you get around that and not get to the depths that Tyson Fury went to?
Yeah, I didn't go as far as him and go that way down, but the people around me, it's I think it's critical having the right people around you, whether it's family, whether it's a team, whether it's cousins, whoever it is that's there to support you. You got to have the right people around you to, when you're doing something wrong, when you're going downhill, or when things aren't going right, they can pull you back and help you and encourage you and motivate you and push you to come back and be better.
And have you got any strategies in place yourself? Like, do you if you're getting into a bit of a slump?
Just nothing has happened as of late where I've thought, I'm going the wrong way or I'm going off track. But if I do, I just come back and, being here at home, spending time with the kids and family and just remembering and realizing what's important.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, man, I could talk to you for hours. We haven't even talked about the AJ fight yet. Anthony Joshua, that fight comes about. I was in Taupo at the time. I was watching it on my iPad, and it brought back memories. How old were you when the tour man fought Lennox Lewis?
8 years old.
Do you remember that fight?
I remember the fight.
Because your fight with Anthony Joshua, it felt like it had similarities to me. It's like you're this big hitter. Everyone talks about your speed and your power, but it's like you just couldn't penetrate the guy.
No.
Same sort of thing. So let's talk about that fight. First of all, how much money did you make from that fight? Can you talk about that or not really?
What did I make?
Was it a set rate or was it a pay-per-view thing?
It was a 33% revenue share to our team and 67% to their team.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Right.
I made, whatever I made, I had to pay 45% tax.
45%?
That's the tax rate in the UK, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
Everything I make now is 45% tax.
Because it's in the UK.
Yeah, I'm a tax resident in the UK.
Shit. Okay, yeah, so that's the misleading thing, because you hear reports about how much money you get made.
Half is pretty much gone, yeah.
Yeah, 45% gone, and then I'm guessing there's, there's the agent, trainer fees.
Camp class manager, and then there's the training. Listen, the camp is expensive. If you think about it, you fly up to wherever you're training. You have an apartment or a house that you're staying at. You bring in a nutritionist, a chef. Then you bring in your trainer. He gets 10%. Then you bring in sparring partners. They get £1,500 a week. Then you pay for their food and their cost of accommodation.
Mm.
And you're paying for all of this and all of that. And then it's, at the end, it adds up.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
So say you earn $1 million for a fight. How much of that million would you get to keep? Like 300,000, 400,000?
So say if you earn $1 million, then 10% goes to the trainer,
right?
20 or 25% goes to the manager, and then you pay 45% tax. But your costs come off the top, training fees and all your travel and all everything else comes off the top, and then you get whatever's left.
So you may make like 20%, 25%.
Say something like that, yeah, probably.
Fuck.
So it gets shipped right down.
No wonder you've got a Kia in your driveway.
Listen, I love that Kia.
Where's it from? Give the guy a plug again.
Andrew Sims. Matthew Wales. Yeah, get up.
And do you have any regrets about that fight now? Like you think?
Of course.
Do you?
Yeah, of course. When I think about it, I was, I went into camp at 125 kgs. And then I went all the way down to 107. So I was fat. Prick. And I went into camp and I focused on losing weight and getting fit and trying to get the combinations and everything together and doing the sparring and this. And by the end of it, I was in great shape. But imagine if I went into camp in better shape, I'll be in tremendous shape.
Yeah.
But the game plan was to box and move because he was a big puncher and to counter. But I was too defensive and I didn't put the pressure on and I was too just waiting. Too much waiting. So if I could turn back time, I would put the pressure on right from the beginning. Because when I did put the pressure on, he always went back and didn't know what to do.
Mm.
And I should have picked up on that in the fight. That's the difference between, good fighters and great fighters, being able to adjust and adapt in the fight.
But how much do you think about it now? Or are you quite good at like putting a line in the sand and just moving on?
Oh, I thought about it after the fight. I thought about it that year, 2018, and I'm done thinking about it.
Would you like to fight him again?
Yeah, bring him on, yeah.
Who's the hardest punch that you've ever received? Because you sparred with Vladimir Klitschko for a few weeks, didn't you?
I sparred Klitschko, and one thing about Klitschko is that he's one of the craziest trainers too. He brought in, I don't know how many, 10 sparring partners, and he sparred 12 rounds on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. That's 48 rounds in 1 week.
Mm.
That's way too much. That's way too many rounds.
Overtraining.
Well, that's what I think is overtraining. Yeah. But he's done that for a long time. And I did spar with him, and he's a big puncher. But the heaviest puncher I got hit by was Andy Ruiz. And I think I think the reason why is because he punches fast and hard. The speed brings more power. And it was more like a shock and a sting rather than just a heavy punch.
Mm. What about Joshua? Does he hit hard?
He wasn't able to catch me clean.
Yeah, yeah.
He did catch me once, and but it wasn't a clean punch.
Mm.
But I think, obviously, if he hits me clean, he's knocked out how many people in his career? Nearly everyone.
Yeah. So you're 30 years old now. I'm pretty sure, maybe I've got this wrong, but I'm pretty sure you told me early in your career that you hoped to be done by 30.
Yeah, I did, by around 30, yeah.
Yeah.
Plus four.
Is that the thing? You get to the point where your value goes up, you're earning good money. It's got to be hard to turn away from it, I suppose. Is it a money thing or is it still more to achieve for you?
Well, for me, it's more to achieve. Like I said, I went through that phase where I was wanting to be a world champion. I did it. And then it felt like I wasn't as happy as everyone else was.
Yeah.
Because we touched on it. I must have been doing it for other people. Mm. But I feel like now I'm doing it for myself. And now that I've been revived as a fighter, I feel like I have way more to give. And I'm still I'm learning way more now with this new team. So I just want to give it a good go for the next, 3-4 years and see what I can do. Mm. But it's not about the money. Like, I've done okay and I'm happy and I'm content, but I just want to do this for myself and see where I can end up.
Yeah. And I feel like you've still had a lot to offer, and it doesn't feel like you've had too many knocks to the head.
Not too many. But
I said
to the team, listen, if you see me take punches and you see me start mumbling my words and not making sense, and, you know, please let me know, because that's the time for me to pull out. Yeah. I want to enjoy the rest of my life with my kids, and I don't want to have that issue of not knowing how to spell my name and say my name and this, you know, just all that stuff that a lot of fighters do go through at the end of their career.
Yeah. Luckily, I mean, Joe's very easy to spell. Even. Oh no, I think you've still got a lot to offer. You do.
I have a lot to offer the heavyweight division.
Yeah,
and I'll give it the best I have, and I'll see where it ends up.
Do you know what life after boxing looks like?
I've thought about many things: being a pilot, being a coach. You know, just being a gardener. I don't know. There's a lot of things I want to do. Chart a boat. I love fishing with a passion.
Yeah.
But I haven't settled on anything yet.
I mean, I feel like whatever you decide you want to do, you can probably do. Like, it surprised me when I found out you could play the piano.
Yeah, my sister played the piano, and she taught me a few things, you know, a few songs. My brother plays the piano. We play the drums. We play guitar, play the triangle, shakers.
You can play the triangle.
Yeah, ting, ting, ting.
I reckon even if you do one fight too many, you can probably still play the triangle. Oh, this has been great. Oh, there's one thing, I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, and that's fine. Last year, there was some stuff that came out.
Yeah.
Did you want to... I remember hearing it at the time. It was like something to do with like money laundering or some shit. Did you want to talk about that? You don't want to talk about that?
Not really.
No.
Because it would just open up more things.
Yeah.
But the only thing I could say about it is they've done all the investigation. There was nothing on me.
Yeah.
And they still released my name.
Yeah.
For what purpose?
Mm.
Released it for what purpose? I don't know, because there was nothing on me.
Yeah.
It was all made up. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not saying I haven't done
Absolutely.
I haven't done anything that's against the law.
Okay. We've all got regrets, and you know, anyone that says they're perfect is full of shit.
I'm not perfect, far from it. But but being associated with people doesn't mean that you're doing stuff or you've done this and whatever they said about me.
Yeah.
Because if it was all true, I wouldn't be here today. I'd be locked up.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I must admit, before that stuff came out, being in media, you know, you hear whispers.
Yeah, it was the worst kept secret.
Yeah. I was really surprised. I said, I consider Joseph a friend, and I know him pretty well, and it just doesn't sound like him.
It was the worst kept secret at the time. Everyone knew about it, but no one said anything about it. And then when it was released, I was just like, I was overseas at the time. I was in Ireland training with Andy Lee.
So this was going on for years? Like, you were fighting to keep...
This was going on since 2017?
That must have been so hard for you and your family.
Oh, listen, the hard part is just knowing there's something there, but it's just behind, it's just like at the back of your head, but you're fighting and you're, you know, having family time and, you know, doing a lot of things, but there's always something just lurking in the back. But when it released, I'm happy now that it's out there now, because there's nothing bothering me anymore.
Because I'm guessing you weren't in court yourself, but lawyers were in there trying to keep your name suppressed. Well, that just seems mean and pointless that your name was released when there's no charges or anything like that.
Yeah, that's what
I think. Does that make you angry?
No, you just, listen, if you're angry, you're wasting your energy. Mm. You just got to accept it. And I've accepted it. I've accepted what happened. And I'm happy. I'm happy that it's gone now and it's in the past, and I'm able to move on and just focus on what's in front of me and what's important. Family, career, and just doing the best I can in everything I do.
Yeah. Stressful few years, though. But I don't think it's even one of those things that you know, defines you or is part of the Joe Parker legacy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I put on Instagram yesterday that I'm meeting you today and we're having a chat. Any questions? And I was thinking, I'm going to have to sit here moderating them because people are going to bring this up. Not one person did.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. Thanks, team.
So we'll get to those questions in a second. But, did part of this come up because of your friendship with Manu? Manu Vatavai? No.
That was totally separate. No. Right. It was just being associated with people.
Yeah.
Association. But it doesn't, like I said, knowing someone doesn't mean you're doing what they're doing.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. How is Manu? Have you spoken to him or you seen
him? Yeah, I've sent a message to one of the people that is sort of communicating with him, and I've sent him my love and said, if there's anything I can do for his family while he's in there, let me know.
Is he doing all right? Do you know?
From what I heard, he's doing okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good guy. He made a mistake.
Oh, listen, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
We had a great friendship. We're like brothers too, you know.
Yeah.
He made a mistake, and hopefully he's learned from it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he will.
And I think anyone that makes a mistake will learn from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? No matter how big, no matter how small, and there's always consequences to what you do.
I'm a big fan of like fuck ups, because I think you can win a fight and you're not going to learn much from it. But if you lose a fight, you're probably going to take so much more from it. Like I'm guessing you talk about you winning your world title and you're not feeling as happy as what you felt you should. I'm guessing you probably learned way more from the Anthony Joshua loss than from your world title win.
Yeah, I learned a lot from that loss because I knew exactly after the fight. I'm like, oh damn, I wish I did this. I wish I did that. That's all learning. Now let me work on this in the next camp. And then I lost to Dillian White. I was like, you prick. I've been wanting a rematch for a long time with him. And we have a type of relationship where it's like we used to message on Instagram, and he blocked me now.
Did he block you? Why?
He blocked me. I'm not
what happened in the lead up to that? Was it like trash talk or
nah, we would text and communicate and we would talk, and then I'll say, hey, how are you? And he'll say, all good, bro. And then, you know, and then I'll repost someone's post about me fighting him. And then he'll say, and then he'll send me all these nasty messages and, you know, F you. And, you know, I smash you up and I F you up again. You know, you're my woman. I own you. I can't find him now because he's blocked me. But
that's not great trash talk.
Then I would text him and I'll say, just relax and settle down. There's only a post. And then 5 weeks later, I will text him, hey, I really like your T-shirts. And then he'll text back, you want some? I go, yes. And then he's, what's your address? And then he sends me T-shirts all the way from the UK.
Amazing.
So
he's like a Jekyll and Hyde sort of character.
I'm not quite sure. I just take him for what he is.
Yeah.
But now I can't take him for what he is because I'm blocked.
That's so crazy. Is your biggest weakness, do you think, just being too nice? Like I know a lot of people have said that over the years that you lack the aggression, and are you like too much of a nice guy for it to be a like the best boxer ever?
I think that has held me back. But now,
I mean, as far as criticisms go, it's not a bad character trait to have.
Imagine going from being the nice guy to training with Tyson and Sugar and Andy, and learning. You know, it's not what you do in the ring, it's what you do outside of the ring leading into the fight.
Yeah.
So now I think there's a bit of a switch now that I could switch on and off.
Right.
And I showed glimpses in the Chisora fight, but I need to show more in the future fights.
Because I'm guessing you don't hate anyone. Like you, I don't, do you, in the lead up to a fight, like do you have to like convince yourself you hate the person?
No, not so much convinced, but I want to, like now the person in front of me, I want to bash them. Like I really want to smash them in the face because that's what they're trying to do to me. Back then I would say, yeah, I want to smash them. But when I thought about it, did I really want to smash them? But now, you know, because of what I'm doing for myself and wanting to be world champion again, there's a purpose behind what I do. There was before, but now there's even more of a purpose.
Yeah. So where are you ranked in the world at the moment?
Number 2 in the WBO,
shit.
Number 3 in the WBC, and number 4 overall, number 4 or 5.
Yeah, you're going to be the best in the world again?
I'll be best in the world again. I will be the best in the world again.
Yeah.
I'll be champion.
I believe you.
I will be champion.
Hey, we'll end with some of these Instagram questions that came through. Someone asked, how do you overcome your nerves, like in the lead up to a fight?
There's always going to be nerves.
Yeah.
You know, we're human. I said to Tyson, do you ever get nervous? He goes, no. I said, what about when you're walking to the ring and all of that? He goes, no. Sometimes he forgets that he's going to have a fight, and then when the bell goes and he gets hit, he goes, oh, damn, now I'm fighting.
For me, like it wakes him up.
For me, there are little nerves, but they're just, I think those are good nerves. It's like a reminder that there's something big coming up.
Yeah.
But it's not like, it's not bad nerves. It's good nerves.
Right, yeah, so you just can't let them overcome you. Is it like excitement nerves?
It's excitement nerves, like, okay, there's something, there's something big coming up. It's not so much, it's not negative ones. One is like, oh, have I trained enough? Am I in shape? Am I going to be ready? Mm. Oh, how is this going to go? Is he going to smash me? Oh, man, how am I going to look in front of everyone? Is my uniform all good? Oh, my gosh, you know.
Yeah, because I suppose, like, the worst case scenario for you, or for any boxer for that matter, is you end up with a situation like Shane Cameron had with David Tua. That's the absolute worst case scenario, right? That you get taken out of there with paramedics.
Yeah, but if you go in there thinking about or worrying about the result and worrying about how you're going to look, you sort of go away from the structure and the process of trying to, of going out there and doing your best. Why worry about something you can't control?
Yeah.
Just focus on you and then everything will unfold the way it should be.
Yeah. Actually, I remember hearing Richie McCaw in an interview many years ago. It was during the 2011 World Cup. And he said, oh, people say to me all the time, oh, God, are you nervous you'll lose? What if you lose? What if you lose? Yeah. And he's like, no, what if we win? What if we win?
Well, yeah.
I suppose it's thinking more glass half full rather than glass half empty.
Yeah, well, even like, say, example, you wake up and you're not feeling the best. Are you going to tell yourself you're not feeling the best? Or are you just going to say, I'm going to have a great day? Mindset changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah, mindset and gratitude, I reckon.
Mindset and gratitude,
good with the gratitude?
Very, very.
Well, I'm looking around here. You've got your own Space Invader machine. You've got a fridge with glass doors, and you gave me a My Zone. You came out here with a bunch of snacks. You've got a lot to be grateful for, Joseph.
I am very grateful.
No,
For everything in my life, for the people that I surround myself with, and for the generous people that look after me.
Yeah, actually, I was just being funny before. I mentioned a couple of the material things, but you've got a wonderful family. There's so much for you to be grateful for, right?
Listen, I'm a very grateful person.
Yeah,
and I'm very thankful for just like my life and what I've achieved and what I have and who I have.
Yeah. Well, you've worked for it.
Yeah, I've worked very hard, yeah.
You've worked for
but
it.
But very grateful.
You've done your time. There's this guy called Malcolm Gladwell, and he's got a book called The Tipping Point, and he talks about he's got a rule of 10,000 hours. Like, it takes 10,000 hours of practice to get to...
To that.
And I feel like you talked about your amateur fights before, all those fights. You must have done your 10,000 hours and
some. I think I did.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the easiest traveling around the world. Fighting on different tournaments, sometimes traveling with no coach because New Zealand didn't have enough money to send a coach and send you. But I think I have done the hard yards leading into what I've been able to achieve.
Yeah. Okay, back to those Instagram questions. Someone said, what's the difference between AJ and Tyson Fury? I suppose they mean as boxers rather than people.
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't fought Fury, but you've sparred with him, kind of.
Kind of. Body sparring. I think the big...
By the way, what does body sparring mean? What does that mean?
Smashing your body as hard as you can.
So I'll
show you some clips soon.
So you're smashing his body, or he's smashing your body, or both?
Well, both. We're trying to find holes, and we're trying to find openings and smashing as hard as you can.
Are you wearing pads?
Nothing. No, nothing. Just gloves. Body sparring. Body sparring is serious. Like, body sparring is very tiring. I think the biggest difference of AJ and Tyson is that Tyson has got the best fitness of anyone that I've, even though Tyson's body doesn't look in the best shape, but he is in better shape, in boxing shape than AJ.
Yeah.
AJ is shredded and he's got a great body, but I think for boxing, it's too much muscle for boxing.
Right. Yeah, is that a thing? You reckon?
Muscle bound. Mm. Like muscle bound, and the more muscle you have, the more the oxygen has to go to those muscles.
Right.
And then I'm not sure how long the muscles can hang on to. Can it go 12 rounds? He's had issues of being tired, AJ, with the Usyk fight.
Because who's the Mexican guy that loves the Snickers that beat
Andy Ruiz?
Andy Ruiz, yeah.
Andy Ruiz.
Yeah, that's right. Like, you see them together at a weigh-in and you think, okay, this guy's going to get smoked.
You think because of bodies that this, because he looks great, he's going to smoke him because he's chubby. But sometimes it's... Boxing is a different sport in terms of bodies. It's not always about how good you look. It's not even about how good you look. It's about how strong and how fit you are, and if how good you are technically.
I love how when I mentioned the Snickers, you knew exactly.
Andy, that's so sad.
What was the story? Didn't he have a Snickers straight after a fight, and then Snickers sent him up like truckloads?
Because he loved Snickers, and when he beat Anthony Joshua, I think Snickers did something with him.
Yeah,
so he became he became the Snickers man.
Yeah, because you've beaten him, eh?
I beat him to become world champion.
Yeah, that's right. I think that was here in Auckland.
In Auckland,
we had an interview with him.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Lovely guy.
Lovely guy.
Mm. Okay, another Instagram question. I don't know if this is a deep one or not, but where does the urge to fight come from?
The urge to fight.
I don't know what that means exactly. How do you interpret that?
The urge to fight. In the beginning, it wasn't even about money.
Yeah.
It wasn't even.
Was it to, like, win your dad's approval in a way?
It was something like to to impress my dad or to make his dreams come true.
Yeah.
That's what I was about. And I always thought to myself, you know, I'm going to do well and smash everyone and whatever happens, happens. And the money came and, you know, and being popular came.
Mm.
But the urge to fight is right now, the urge to fight is because I just want to be champion.
Yeah.
And I want that belt.
Yeah.
So that's why I want to fight.
Is it about you now? Are you doing it for yourself?
It's about me now and my family.
Yeah.
My wife and kids. Not about anyone else. Not about my parents or, you know, coaches or it's about me and my family.
Jeez, your dad must be so proud. Right?
My dad is the most nervous. Sometimes I look over, like imagine fighting and you look over and your dad's not watching the fight. He's just so nervous that he can't really watch you when you're in the ring.
Why is that? You think, like, this is what he wanted.
This is what, my mom watches it more than my dad.
Right, right.
Like, he is so nervous. Like, he's, I don't know, he's just... Because he got us, he got us into this.
He must be torn. He's like, I did this.
He got us into this. And any time we've been hurt, he's just like, I'm sorry. It's my fault. And I just, Dad, well, relax. It's all good.
Well, luckily you've never really been. Have you ever really been hurt?
Only once Dillian White headbutt me.
Right.
And then he knocked me down off a left hook. But right. I wasn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
I was more hurt from the headbutt.
Yeah.
So I want to headbutt him back.
You owe him one. Back to these Instagram questions. Has your why changed over the years?
My why has changed, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to that, the urge to fight.
Yeah.
My why is myself and my family, my wife and kids. That's my why.
Oh, that's cool,
listen, when you have your own family, that's everything changes.
Yeah.
They become the most important people in your lives. And of course, you love your parents and you love your siblings and you love cousins and all that. But when it's your family, it is your family. It's a different feeling. And I don't know, maybe people can relate to that.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. 100%. I'm sure everyone can. Someone asked, what's your. Are you much into weights? You mentioned before that when Sonny Bill came over, you were in the weights part of your training cycle. Someone wanted to know, what's your one rep max for bench, squat, and deadlift?
Well, for deadlift, is 220 kgs. For bench, I only got up to 125. What's the other one? Squat.
Yeah.
200.
200. What's it? Four 20-kilo plates each side and a 10. Shit. Well, that's a big squat. Oh, you're not going very deep, though, are you? You're not going all the way down.
Ass to grass.
And someone said on Instagram, like, what are your biggest fears?
My biggest fears.
The funny thing is, I guess, what you do day in, day out is most people's biggest fear.
Yeah.
But it's not scary for you. It's exciting for you.
It's exciting for me. My biggest fear is not giving it everything I have. My biggest fear is not training hard. My biggest fear is not... my other biggest fear is not being a good dad and not giving time to my kids. So that's... When I do have the opportunity to give time, I give my full attention.
Right. Yeah, that's got to be the hardest thing, being away for so long.
Being away. And listen, being away and maybe missing the next birth. Because I might be flying out tomorrow. If I can lock in this next contract for the next fight in July, I'll be off tomorrow.
Yeah, so we're recording this podcast on Friday the 13th of May. When's your wife's due date?
20th.
Right. So that's like a week away. Can't they induce?
They've suggested, but yeah. She wants to be doing the natural way.
Jeez, she must be an incredible woman. So she's okay with you. She's not salty about you not being
never
here. Yeah,
because she supports. She can see why I do this. It's for our family. You know, not fighting and bashing people, but you know, with the fighting comes money, and you can pay for things. We've traveled all around the world as a family. We've traveled to England, traveled to Dubai, Ireland, Mexico, Vegas, LA. We've done some fun things, and I think, you know, that kind of that stuff really makes me happy.
Yeah,
experiences with the family around the world, taking my kids to Dubai. We've been on the beach and swimming at the pool, and just giving them life experiences that I don't know that they'll never forget.
Yeah, when you're older, you're not going to have regrets yourself though, like about missing the births. I suppose you don't know now. But.
I honestly have the closest relationship with my girls, even though I've missed the birth of all their all the births, but I've made up for it. You know. Well, listen, I don't even have to make up for it. Just the relationship I have with them.
Yeah.
If I went in there right now, they'll all come running to me. And I'm not even gone. I'm not even leaving. I haven't even left the house. Listen, if I walk in now, they all start running to me like, daddy, daddy. Oh,
man, that's so special. You know?
And that's the best feeling, being a dad. I'll take that feeling any day of the week, than any other feeling.
Do they sort of have an understanding of what you do, or are they too young?
They do, yeah.
Yeah,
they've been to two fights.
Have they?
Yeah,
have they?
The older two, yeah. The last one, and they've been to one in Christchurch, and they watch it on TV.
I thought you'd try and... It's a weird one, eh? I thought you'd try and, like, sort of shelter them from that, I guess. But then again,
they come in the garage, they watch me train.
Right,
they watch
right.
me punch the bag.
What do they think? Do they get nervous, or is it just like... I suppose they've just...
Go, Daddy. Keep it up, Daddy. Good work. Daddy, can I try your gloves? Listen, they come in, and when I do push-ups, they do push-ups.
Right.
When I do a run on a treadmill, they run up and down here. They're like, "Daddy, we're training with you, and can you give us the weights, please?" They want to join in.
Oh, I love that so much.
They want to join. I think it's a good it's good for them to see what I do.
Yeah,
and then hopefully it can pass on to for them, because health is wealth, and you got to
absolutely. Oh, health is everything. There's a quote I really like: "A man that has his health can have many wishes. A man that doesn't have his health." Only has one wish.
Yeah, you can have everything in the world, but if you don't have your health, what's the purpose of it? You can't
absolutely.
Enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Health is key.
And last one from Instagram. Any regrets?
Any regrets?
Yeah. I suppose in your life, sport, whatever.
I wouldn't be the person I am today if I had regrets. I enjoy, I listen, everything that I've done in my life, I'm happy with.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed. And it's happened, everything has happened for a reason. So I have no regrets. Nothing at all.
That's a great attitude.
Nothing.
Good. Not even doing this podcast today.
Not even doing this podcast. I have no, I honestly, I am so happy where I am in life. And I love my family and I love what I'm doing. And I enjoy every day. I wake up happy. I wake up ready to train. I wake up in a good mood. And hey, life is very, very good.
Mm. And you say health is wealth. After boxing, what do you think health and fitness will look like for you? Is it going to be running?
I'm going to build a gym right in that area.
Where the playhouse is.
That's going to be removed. I'm going to build a gym there with a ring, and I'm going to have everything in there, and I have no excuse to keep in shape. Right. I don't want to be that fighter who's at the end of the career, after the career, and is not in shape, and he looks terrible. I will stay in shape for the rest of my life. It's not just for boxing. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think running will always be part
running
of your life?
Running will always be part of my life. Running, walking, jogging, all of that. I enjoy it. I went for a run this morning with my brother John, and it wasn't the fastest pace, but we had a great time.
Yeah, where you live, it's very hilly.
It was good.
Yeah.
It's like,
how far did you go?
6 kilometers.
Yeah.
It was a good run. Took Kaiser, my dog, with me, and it was good. I really enjoyed the scenery. You know, what a beautiful day it is to run.
Yeah, and
it makes me want to go for another run.
You're in sort of rural South Auckland on a. That's a noisy ass bird. You're in sort of rural South Auckland on a, almost like you'd call it maybe a lifestyle block. And it's the air out here is just beautiful.
Yeah, the air is beautiful. Yeah. And listen, Roger lives just over here.
Who's Roger?
Tuivasashek.
Really?
Down there.
Oh, shit. Let's go down and do a podcast.
Let's go do a podcast with Roger.
Hey, Joseph Parker, you're an absolute great New Zealander. I've known you, as I said at the beginning, for maybe 10 years now, and you've never changed in that time. Like, you've just always been just a really, really nice guy.
I think it's important to important to be yourself and stay true to yourself.
Mm.
And just because you've made good things in life, like money, and you've got a house and this and that, just be yourself. And I think that's what my mom told me. Just, son, be yourself and just don't change.
Yeah. Unless you're an asshole, in which case you should change a little bit and don't be yourself.
Listen, if you're an asshole, then come back to being a nice person.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thank you so much for your time today, mate. It's been an absolute honor to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for listening to Runners Only with Dom Harvey and Joseph Parker. If you like that episode, please recommend it to a friend who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you don't already, can you please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from? All right. Thanks, team. See you next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.